This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, 1 year into the COVID-19 pandemic.
It's been quite a year to think where we were 365 days ago.
If someone gets within 5 feet of me, I'm like, you know, what's your deal, person? What is your deal?
Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla on the year that was and attempting to lead Americans out of the pandemic.
The price for all Americans is free right now. The price to the government is a fraction of what the economy is gaining.
Plus the drug makers' vaccine efficacy.
What I know it is our vaccine is protecting against asymptomatic infections at 94%.
It's Thursday. It's March 370th something.
Elbow bumps for life, folks.
It is 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin, and we're going to start things out this morning with the money. It is about the money. Let's talk about the markets. Gentlemen, let's take a look at the Squawk stack this morning. Not sure where we left things. I think Tesla was in yesterday. Oh, we're back to GameStop, which is down 10% this morning. Anything anybody wants to change up or add?
No, I wanted GameStop because yesterday I think it was 350 at one point. So maybe we can't really fit in a chart there, but we could use one. The 10-year, as you say, is right about where it's been, but because 10 basis points is such a small amount, but it looks way different than 1.6, which is where it was on Monday.
Anything below 1.5, all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, we're off the
but
recent
But it was 1.6 on Monday when we started talking. And 1.6 on Monday and four straight days with big gains. So far, it looks like a pretty good call.
I want to add
Roblox.
We should add Roblox. That
might work
just for the day. We could
instead
buy that
of
for
Bitcoin
fun.
Maybe today.
And what else?
We might actually have to put up Coupang later today.
Yeah.
And at some point we're going to have to get Steve Leisman or somebody to do polling for this. We should get a percentage of Americans vaccinated.
Vaccinated. That's
line.
A very good idea.
I think we could have a separate chart that leads into this. I wish we had number of...
You know, the other thing I'd like to keep an eye on is that Beeple NFT. I mean, that has got to be something that tells you about how much liquidity there is out there.
I think we should get not how many people vaccinated. That's too complicated. That's one shot, two shots. I think it should be everyone vaccinated with either one or two and everybody that's had COVID. Because we don't know. It's like people have said it's 6 times. And then I want to see where we are. Because someone said it could be 60%, 65%. So we know Texas open. Well, we know there's all these reopenings.
We passed 25 million who have had COVID already.
And yeah, but
I think we
what's
are now
real number?
Past that in terms of people who have at least got one shot. No, and I think you could at least double, if not triple,
I said
the number
it's six
who have
times
had COVID.
That, maybe. Might be six times that. So, and
that's
then.
What Dr. Makary said, right?
Yeah, then we talked to Gottlieb yesterday, who said that it will flip from us people begging to get the shots to the shooters begging to give people the shots.
Begging them to get the shots.
And also some interesting pieces today about these companies that have done so well. We assume that they've moved up to a new level and that they don't give, you know, three steps up, maybe one step back. Will it only be one step back for the stay-at-homers? DoorDash,
no,
did you see that?
What I will tell you,
it's not going to be.
The thing I thought was most interesting yesterday, maybe one of our sleeper interviews, was the head of the ports down in South Carolina, just talking about how, look, you are. He thinks it's all because people have been sitting at home. One of the biggest things that they've seen coming through the ports has been furniture because people have been buying for their homes, and he does not think it will last.
We believe that as we get to herd immunity, you know, more vaccinations, that people will go back and start consuming more services. You only need so many Peloton bikes, flat screen TVs. So I think it will revert to normal. But that should not be, in our view, until, you know, June, July in the summertime, basically. And then that is the normal peak season. So it remains to be seen if the economy is strong, you know, what the peak season will look like this year.
We've got to keep checking in with him to see when he says, OK, we've gotten through this glut and maybe things are starting to slow down, because that means consumers. He said they're not spending on going out to eat. They're not spending on traveling. They are spending on their home. If you can watch kind of with the ports, the demand drop down, that tells you a lot about those stocks that have risen, just like you've been talking about, Joe.
Yeah. There's going to be some give back on the sentiment on the stay at home sector. And maybe there is some disappointment. And I
sleeper interview? How about the just the slightest bit less than our normal blockbuster interview? Is that possible?
I mean, I don't know if people paid enough attention to it. It was my favorite interview from yesterday, but I don't know if people paid enough attention to it.
We don't do sleeper
interviews.
It
really was my favorite interview. I learned
more than We've never had a sleeper interview. We have unbelievable
blockbuster. And when you looked at our big guest list yesterday, you might not have assumed that it was a favorite, but it was my favorite interview yesterday because I learned something totally different.
When was that on? That was yesterday. Okay.
You're right.
I'm with Becky. If you haven't bought your Peloton yet, I don't know if you're ever buying a Peloton. So,
I started saying it. Don't you think it's
you two can be on the same team?
No, we don't want to be on the same team. We're all on the same team. We're all together.
By the way, we ended up getting a Peloton treadmill during the pandemic. But I can't imagine. I mean, there will be people who will need to continue to buy Peloton equipment and things.
A treadmill.
But to think that this is going to become.
Yeah, treadmills are good. Treadmill. You didn't get the
treadmill's
bike.
Great.
Yeah,
the tread is great. But all I was going to say is I think a lot of people who wanted to do this did it now. And to think that over the next 12 months, 18 months, that somehow that kind of growth is going to either be sustained or even look similar, I think is hard to believe. But who knows?
Today, March 11th, is a milestone. President Biden will make his first primetime address tonight to address the next phase of the U.S. COVID response. He'll also commemorate the one-year anniversary of the, at the time, unbelievable shutdowns taken across the nation at the beginning of the pandemic. Here's the head of the World Health Organization 1 year ago today.
WHO has been assessing this outbreak around the clock, and we're deeply concerned both by the alarming levels of spread and severity and by the alarming levels of inaction. We have therefore made the assessment that COVID-19 can be characterized as a pandemic.
March 11th, 2020, the U.S. had confirmed 1,000 cases of the novel coronavirus. In the year since, nearly 30 million Americans tested positive, and more than 529,000 of our fellow citizens have died. Also during that time, three vaccines were developed and approved by U.S. regulators, and nearly 96 million shots have been administered. Almost 25% of the country's adult population has received at least one shot.
It's been quite a year. Quite a year it has been to think where we were 365 days ago, Joe.
In your brain trying to figure it out, there are things that I think have been seem like they were 10 years ago, and then there's things that, I mean, Easter, I swear we still hide eggs in our house. My kids are 21 and 18. Yeah, 21 and 18.
It's okay.
Okay, and they have, you know, maybe candy, maybe a message, like a nice message, something to think about or in there. But I swear we were just, well, I actually don't do it. I was just watching someone do that, hide all of them. It seems like
Easter
it was.
The Easter Bunny.
Yeah, the Easter Bunny. That's right, the Easter Bunny. That seems like last week. But then other things seem like this has just been the endless, endless mask wearing. And I don't know, I'm still. I was walking around, outside in a park yesterday. If someone gets within 5 feet of me, I'm like, you know, what's your deal, person? What is your deal? Do you not understand
that this? Before the pandemic.
No, that was people around me. That was other
get
people.
Get away from
No, but there will be some. Some of that's going to be hard to change, right? I'd feel really weird at a crowded bar.
I read an article yesterday about how people are going to have a hard time coming back out. Yeah. Right. I'm not going back to kissing people anytime soon on the cheek, except for my immediate family.
Right. Do you think that restaurants...
Elbow bumps for life, folks.
Yeah, elbow bumps. Do you think restaurants go initially have more business than prior to it? And does DoorDash initially go down below it was before it started? Or is it not all the way back?
I don't know about DoorDash going down, but I think restaurants will have more business. I've cooked dinner, I think, now 365 nights in a row at home, and I am sick of it.
Oh, not everybody has done that. I've been out a lot, but not everyone has. But you've got, obviously, you know, your parents and everything else. But we have.
That's somebody I'm protecting. Yeah,
yeah, you must be just nuts.
Sick of it. Yeah, imagine how sick they are of my cooking. My gosh.
Yeah. Has he gotten any better?
would you say?
Yes.
Practice?
I have all kinds of new recipes now.
Practice makes perfect.
Well, I have new recipes I've tried. It's just, you know, it's breaking out of your habits. You can't have the same four meals or six meals. You got to break out and find new things. And I've gotten much better at
that. Can I make a suggestion? Someone sent me one of those slow cookers, and it has my face on it. It's not, this is years ago, five, six, 8 years ago.
We have it, too. Remember, we all got them.
We all got it. All right.
It's embarrassing.
Slow cookers. You can make anything. I think you could put a shoe in there, and it'd be like, wow, this is, you know, you put enough chicken broth and maybe some mushroom soup and let it go for like 12 hours. It'd be like not bad. The sole might not be as good as the leather part, but I mean, pork chops in there. We've got some really good slow cooker. Have you done the slow cooker, Becky? Or are you just doing,
I have chicken and dumplings. You can make chicken and dumplings in them too. And there's a really good beef stew you can make in it.
Yeah.
There's just beef that if you let it marinate for 12 hours becomes super tender.
Look at Sorkin though. He weighs less. I guess that's the treadmill. Everybody else has gained weight.
The treadmill is life-changing, guys, just so you know.
Next on Squawk Pod, a year into pandemic and Pfizer's journey to today's vaccine. CEO Albert Bourla.
This is the first time that we are coming with a confirmation of a real-world evidence study of that magnitude. And, of course, we never expected that high number, 94%.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Today on the podcast, 1 year. And on this anniversary of a once-in-a-lifetime global pandemic, a year that has felt difficult, even endless, it's staggering to think how close we are to the other side. President Biden has said every American adult who wants to be vaccinated should be able to receive that shot in the arm by the end of May. In this country, about 2 million shots a day are being administered. Late last year, just in November, pharmaceutical giant Pfizer announced that its COVID vaccine, developed in months, was more than 90% effective. For Drs. Moncef Slaoui, who advised the Trump White House's Operation Warp Speed initiative, and Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, news of that breakthrough was a powerful moment.
The closer you get to the result, the more you become kind of, oh my God, is it going to work or not?
I was outside in the back yard with my mask on of a friend's home, and I got my cell phone went off, and I got up and I took it because, you know, the people who have my cell phones are people who I should probably talk to. And it was Albert Bourla, who is the CEO of Pfizer. And he said, you're not going to believe this, but the results are absolutely amazing. He said it's well over 90%.
Albert Bourla called just as the press release was coming out, and just to say, you know, efficacy is 90%. And it was incredible. Honestly, it was like one of those moments of joy that you remember forever.
It was like, oh my goodness gracious. It was sort of like a bright ray of sun pushing all the clouds away. That was an incredible feeling that night.
It was kind of liberating because that's the minute you know. Ultimately, we're going to take back control of our lives from this virus.
Monday, November 9th, 2020, and Squawk Box begins right now.
Breaking news from Pfizer this morning about its vaccine and a 90% efficacy.
90% efficacy.
90% effective.
This is good for 900 to 1,000 points on the Dow. Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer.
It is a great day for science. It is a great day for humanity. I think we can see light at the end of the tunnel.
I woke up to a horoscope that said you may be rather emotional about something today. I swear to God. I swear to God.
Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla is out with an open letter today, reflecting on the loss of human life from COVID and the incredible record pace of vaccine scientists. He also praised the power of collaboration, particularly Pfizer's partnership with Germany's BioNTech that resulted in the world's first approved COVID-19 vaccine. And he says thanks to those efforts, liberation is on the horizon. Albert Bourla joined our Squawk Box TV anchors and CNBC's Meg Terrell today. Meg kicks things off.
Albert, thanks for being with us this morning on this, you know, 1 year anniversary mark. You know, and you have this amazing vaccine and more data coming out this morning from real world use in Israel. And I honestly had to check this stat multiple times to make sure I understood it. 94% effectiveness in preventing asymptomatic infection on the ground there in Israel. Tell us about what you're finding there and what this means for stopping this virus.
Thank you, Megan. It is a great opportunity, I think, that in this day of the first anniversary of the declaration of pandemic, we do have a message of hope coming from a country where they have vaccinated almost, actually on Monday, 5 million of their people. Might look small number, but for Israelis, that means that they have vaccinated more than 55% of the total population, more than almost 80% of the eligible population, 16 and above, which is the vaccine. The data basically are telling us three things, I would say, man. The first is that they're confirming the efficacy. Actually, the efficacy so far in Israel is coming at 97%, and that is not efficacy only against deaths or hospitalizations, but also on mild disease. So everything, all three measures, mild disease, hospitalizations, and deaths, are north of 97% in real-world efficacy with millions of people vaccinated. The second, and as you pointed out, likely most important of all, it is that the data are demonstrating 94% efficacy on asymptomatic. This is, means that 94% protection against you getting infected, even if you don't have the disease. This is extremely important, not particularly for you because you will not have the disease, but for society, because the asymptomatic carriers, the asymptomatic patients, are the ones that they are spreading the disease mainly. So this is the first time that we were expecting to have something good in terms of preventing asymptomatic, but this is the first time that we are coming with a confirmation of a real-world evidence study of that magnitude. And, of course, we never expected that high number, 94%.
And also, very interestingly, this was this evidence was collected during a time when that B117, you know, highly contagious variant, was dominant in Israel. And it shows that your vaccine is equally or even more effective than we saw in the clinical trials against that variant. Tell us about what Pfizer is doing to stay ahead of these mutations in the virus, what you're looking at in terms of booster shots, and what you expect in terms of the efficacy against some of the other concerning variants.
You're absolutely right. Actually, this is the third very important thing that comes out of this study. But 80% of the strains, the dominance was 80% of the UK strain over there, and we achieved all these results. So this is promising against variants. What we are doing against variants, we have already initiated a study that we will try to see two things. If we boost our vaccine with the same third dose of the vaccine at 6 months, and if we boost our vaccine with adapted vaccine for the South African variant, which seems to be the toughest one, again, 6 months of all. And we will see, first of all, if we don't need a boost because we have very good protection already with the two doses that the original schedule is, or if we can achieve better protection by giving a third, or if we can achieve better protection by moving to a new a vaccine that will boost the results. And all of these studies, we have initiated them already. We started dosing with the boost. We will jump into, in a few weeks, into the new variant. And we will have some evidence if there is a need to do something different than what we are doing right now.
So you're testing those booster shots at 6 months. I wonder how you're looking at the virus right now and the immune response generated by the vaccine. It's only a year into this pandemic, a brand new virus. We've only had the vaccines for a few months, so it's hard to know. But what are you planning as a company in terms of needing to make enough vaccine for potential boosters? Are you modeling that this could be a twice a year shot that people have to get?
Of course, we are modeling. And we believe that I'm cautiously optimistic that pretty soon the supply will not be there. We may face other issues, logistics, how to make sure that we vaccinate all these people, or we make sure that people that they are not convinced that they get to, they need to get the vaccine, need to be convinced. But supply after a few months, I don't think it will be an issue, at least from our side. Right now, as we had announced to the world, we were about to make more than 2 billion doses. Actually, I reviewed with my team our manufacturing readiness recently. And right now, on a steady state, for example, on the entire 22, we will be, have a capacity of 3 billion doses. That will be, if you have the run rate of what we are doing right now. It's going to be north of 2 billion only this year, full year capacity of 3 billion doses. This is a good enough to supply a very, very big part of the humanity.
Hey, Albert, very quickly, just we have been arguing for some time that it doesn't matter which vaccine you get, if it's Moderna, if it's Pfizer, if it's J&J, even though J&J had lower efficacy numbers, because we said it wasn't really apples to apples, that they were being tested at a time when all these new variants that were out there and when the case count was higher, too, so that likely the effectiveness was much more similar. Based on this new information that you're hearing, should I still feel that way? I mean, I would still get any shot because I know that all of them are likely to keep me out of the hospital, and I won't die if I get any of them. I won't die from COVID. But if you do pick up a mild version of it, even if it's not something that sets you down, could you be more likely to transmit it to somebody else in your household or someone else you come in contact with who has not been vaccinated?
Look, I'm getting this question a lot, and I don't think it's elegant for me to speak about other vaccines, but I will tell you in full honesty what I tell to my relatives or my family, but they're asking me what to do. And I tell them, if you try to get an appointment for a Pfizer vaccine and the sender will give it to you in 2 months and you can get an appointment for another vaccine, the J&J, let's say this week, I urge you go and do the J&J vaccine.
I understand that entirely, and I think that that is the right thing to do, and I think that is what I would do. But if you have someone who can't get the vaccine because they have some other issue, they have cancer or their child, they still can't get it, if you get a mild grade version of this, are you likely to transmit it to somebody? Or does it really cut down, no matter which vaccine you get, does it cut down the transmittability? Are they the same in that level?
I don't know. What I know, it is our vaccine is protecting against asymptomatic infections. To 94%. I don't know the data about J&J or Moderna.
Hey, Albert, it's great to see you. And again, thank you.
Thank you.
Just on behalf of everybody. My question was, there was a great story about you and Pfizer on the cover of Business Week last week. And it made there was an interesting question embedded in it around the profit incentive and how to think about that. Your company is going to make a very good and healthy, more than healthy profit off of this over the next couple of years. I know you hope, and I'm sure the board hopes. J&J chose not to. And I'm curious how you think about that in this context.
I think that everybody, I don't want to criticize or let's say to make comments about others. In our case, we have made the following decisions. One was that we didn't take any taxpayer money to develop it. We took all the risk on our shoulders. We didn't do that because that would allow us to price it at higher levels. Because as you can see, we price it actually even smaller prices than other similar vaccines or what we have heard the U.S. has purchased. So, or very similar or lower. So it was not the case. It was the case we didn't take the money because we felt that this will allow us to liberate our scientists from, let's say, the bureaucracy of having to report, having to agree with those that they gave the money what will be the study design. And as a result, I think we took the risk, but we were able to cross the finish line sooner. The second decision that we made was to give it at the cost. As you know, the price is known in the U.S. It's the price of a meal. Clearly, the value that the vaccine brings to the world is way, way higher. The economic value, not only the health value, but the economic value that brings to the world is tremendous. So we decided to capture a very, very small part of this value, because we didn't want to abuse, let's say, our position, that we could do that. So that's all I have to say. I think that the price for all Americans is free right now. The price to the government is a fraction of what the economy is gaining about that. And I don't think it's appropriate to discuss the price of a meal for a vaccine that saves the world.
It's a fascinating discussion in different approaches to doing something like this, Albert. You know, we have to go. But one last question for you. I know you were waiting your turn in line to get the vaccine.
If you allow me also, I wanted to add something like that. In the low-income countries, like the Africas or some countries in the Middle East, we do give it at cost, right? So for those that even the low price of a meal is a problem, we do give it at cost. We don't give it at cost, but we give it at very, very low price, as I said, in the high-income countries, that they have significant gains from. Sorry, Matt, go ahead.
It makes sense. Albert, have you gotten your shot yet?
I did. I did my second shot a few days ago, and I tweeted about it, and I felt liberated.
Wonderful.
I now worry about my family.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
My family haven't received it yet, but I hope pretty soon we'll find opportunities to get them vaccinated as well.
I hope so, too. And you know now that the asymptomatic transmission is cut down. Albert, thanks again.
Thank you, Meg.
Back to you.
Meg, thank you. And thank you to Albert, not only for coming on today, but more importantly, for what he has done with this vaccine. He and his team at Pfizer, the other companies, I mean, they have given us so much hope. I can't wait to get my shot, too.
Squawk Pod. We'll be right back. And that's the podcast for today. Thank you for listening, as always. It's been quite a year. Thank you for being here. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears. Subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.